if we were going to switch the metaphor and say, okay, there's this little tiny nation, this little England, right? And now we're going to say there's this little world of conservative evangelicalism. Mm-hmm. Not big Eva. I'm talking the conservatives, because this is really only about the little conservative pockets. So who are very close to us. Like, we actually are the most similar to them theologically and everything else. And so I think that the distinctions are a big deal to them. But we're the most similar to them. There's this little nation of England. We're no longer talking about a tiny little neighborhood. It's a little country. Nobody wants Churchill. Nobody likes Churchill until there's Nazis to fight. Mm. Nobody wants that guy until there's nightmares to deal with. And that's been the rhythm of my dad's entire career. The rhythm of my dad's entire career has been when the big bad wolf shows up, people say, bring us Doug Wilson.
Met a ghost of a king on the road when I first fell. Fire burning to my knees I fell. Met a ghost of a king on a road.
Okay, here we are.
And you best believe we're going to talk about something. I don't know. Is it related to stories?
Are we talking about Tucker? What are we talking about?
Yes. I can't. We have to.
Let's do it.
So Nate's father. Oh, sorry, my pastor. What I've noticed is that everybody wants
me
to
padre.
Yeah, everyone wants to connect themselves as closely as possible with the.
Well,
person
they
been
should
on
because so many other people are so quick to say I disagree with everything this person's ever done, but I still know about him and I have a connection to his appearance on Tucker.
I think one of the best ones we saw was. I discussed this person in my book, which just released, you know, and then share the interview. And it's, of course, I think a negative interaction, but the sort of, yeah. So anyways.
Creaking my microphone. Okay.
Pastor Doug Wilson on Tucker Carlson. Quick reaction. Hot takes from his son, Nate. I think there are character moments to discuss that desire to quickly separate yourself. That was actually where I was going to launch off. Why do people do that? Why do Twitter accounts with, I don't know, small amounts of followers have to say, now I don't agree with Doug on everything, but this presentation of the gospel is really good.
I don't know. You should ask them.
We should ask them.
you should ask them.
I think it's because we with small Twitter accounts think we're more important than we are.
Well, you could still get your pastor and your who follows you and your mom who follows you upset at you.
That's true, actually.
You could still get your sister to send you a zinger and refuse to come to dinner.
So you think the emotional sabotage is at work when people are having to distance themselves?
Yep, always.
From a gospel presentation on the largest conservative news network?
Yeah.
Wow, that's probably right.
Yeah, it's right, Brian. I've researched it.
You gave a much more friendly answer.
I've researched it for years.
You gave a much more charitable
answer. The answer is they're cowards.
Oh, wow. Okay. You know? There's Nate. He was charitable for he's charitable for a moment.
But they're scared of their moms and they're scared of their sisters and they're scared of their pastor, whoever it is that they're worried is going to be a problem if they were seen to just tweet something that appeared to be positive.
Yeah.
It's the whole thing just cracks me up. I've talked about some of it before, but you know, but it's just funny, Brian. All of it's funny because
it does feel like a beat.
We've had this freedom. Let me just paint a little picture, shall we? If there's this Christian ghetto, hypothetically, let's call it the gospel industrial complex. Some people call it Big Eva, but it's smaller than Big Eva. It's, you know, we're talking small. I'm talking little. G3, Gospel Coalition, little. We're not talking about anything big and giant. Mm-hmm. You know, we're talking about just a little neighborhood. And it's a little neighborhood in Brooklyn. You know, where we get cold shoulders.
Right.
Where people drop their skirts and turn away.
The third way winsome crowd.
It's not a crowd. It's a tiny, tiny little neighborhood, Brian. Go with me here.
It's just bigger than we are.
No, it's not.
You don't think so?
No, stop clowning.
You mean the elites?
No. I mean the little backward inbred hill people that live in their tiny little version of their tiny version of Big Eva.
Oh, okay. Okay.
We have access to more people than they do. We go more places than they do. We like our impact and the cultural build is in so many ways much, much bigger than that little neighborhood.
Okay.
But that is the little neighborhood where we are ostracized. That's the little neighborhood where they don't want to talk to me.
Yeah.
You know, people in Hollywood, people in like the upper echelons of the music business and the film business and the publishing world text me excited. Hey, your dad's on Tucker.
Sure.
And not Christians.
Sure.
These are not Christians. These are just people who know who I am and know that's my dad.
Right.
And it's like high five.
That's cool.
From unbelievers.
You're right. And then there's crickets. Yeah. From that little gap.
And it's, yeah. And not just unbelievers, but also high fives from secret believers, high fives from believers that are deeply wormed into the infrastructure in the publishing world and so on. So it's very strange to me that my dad going on Tucker is normal. That's not abnormal for us. That's not abnormal for here. Mm-hmm. Like, and it goes back. I've been on the Today Show. I've done NPR. My dad's done more than I have. He's done,
right.
You know, it's like he's gone and he's argued with Joy Behar on TV. And, right. You know, it's like, this is not unique. This is not new.
Been published and run a war, you know,
but he's not allowed to be he's not allowed to be in the main hall at G3.
Yeah.
That's it. Like, that's it. Like the boycott is so tiny.
Gotcha.
It's so little. It's like an Amish community that won't speak to us or look us directly in the eye. And it's, and because they control their own like internal publications, their college newspaper, they control, you know, that little pocket of the world. It can feel big. It can feel like there's this big embargo, but it's more like a siege. It's more like they've shut their doors and locked them and they're all in the cellar. But it's so funny to me. I mean, like the layers here, I wish I could spill names, but I won't because I just don't feel like lighting everything on fire. But
I mean, you already said the organization name, so.
No, I'm talking about individual names. I'm talking about people who will reach out and on their knees beg a favor of me. Like they beg the hookup. They beg for the hookup. They beg for this. They beg for these introductions. I'm talking about guys who've asked me to ghostwrite their books. Like literally. I mean, like, hey, so, you know, they would never, ever publicly affiliate.
Retweet a Doug Wilson interview on Tucker. But. Right.
But they will reach out to me and say, so I really, really, really need some of that. I need your voice. Like I need the ability to write as creatively as you do. This has happened now. I've had, I don't know, I can think of three different guys who've reached out and they want my sauce or my dad's sauce.
Yeah.
You know, and some of them are willing to talk to me publicly, but because they're not covenantal enough, they don't worry that I'm not getting on them any gunk from my dad. so they could still kind of publicly affiliate. But you know, at one point, I think it was Barnabas Piper who I enjoy. He, you know, I like Barnabas who asked me in a brief meeting. We were talking, I can't remember what we were talking about. I think I wrote a foreword for his book.
Yeah. And I was going to say, yeah.
Yeah. I wrote a foreword for his book and, we had some conversation, grabbed coffee or something in person. And he asked me, he's like, man, it must be tough. Like it must be hard. Just kind of he wasn't doing anything bad. He was just acknowledging the fact that I am not invited to certain conferences. I am not asked to speak. It must get to me. I don't know about those particular slumber parties. I don't like, I wasn't invited.
That's sauce right there.
I don't know about those, but B, you know, like, so I was like, doesn't get to me, but B, I can't handle the whole speaking thing. You know, I've got a few that I'll do. I try to limit it as much as possible. I've got a lot that I'm trying to construct. But it really cracks me up that like I've seen my dad on, I grew up with professionally watching my dad on CNN and and doing all these other things in old media. And, mm-hmm. you know, when we've landed major media, because it's something that we've been good at here, when we've landed major media or major media reaches out and we handle it and do appearances, it's not unusual. I'm thrilled he was on Tucker. I think it's great. Mm-hmm. You know, that's great.
It was a ton of fun. It was
He did an awesome job. Great gospel presentation. It's very representative of who he is. It's what he cares about. And when if you give my dad a microphone, he'll preach the gospel. That's what he will do. That's what's going to happen every single time. And it's funny to me. It's really, really funny to me that the tiny little neighborhood, the tiny little clique where all those tweets are generated, where everybody says all those things, that in that clique, they are like, oh no, is he breaking through? It's like, through into what? Like, is Tucker in your neighborhood? It's like, we're not trying to break through. This is not the main stage at G3. Oh, I get chills even thinking about what lofty heights we have yet to obtain. You know, it's not like this is a breakthrough in there, in that neighborhood. We're still not welcome in that neighborhood, nor do we want to go into that neighborhood.
Yeah, but it's gospel neighborhood. All their names have gospel.
But I would say that the inhabitants of that neighborhood are overwhelmingly here, and they're welcome. They're invited to the table. They're invited to the feast. They can come, and they do. They are. Mm-hmm. They are just all wearing little, you know, Shakespearean masquerade masks when they come. So all those people, everybody.
You'd be surprised at whose books are currently on Canon Plus able to be listened to.
Yeah, but also how many people would reach out, text, want to come be here, but want to come be here and keep it off social media, and we just don't care. There's not a Death Star. There's not a Death Star out there that we're scared of. And it's so weird to me. It's always been weird to me that we are locked out of this very tiny ghetto and have been able to move freely everywhere else. It's a weird story that God is telling. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite things that I saw was Mike Cosper popping off about dad cosplaying.
Right.
Cosplaying masculinity. And it's like, oh,
with the flamethrower picture.
It's like, come on, Mike. You know, Mike knows better. I will say this to Mike's credit. I like that he snarked publicly. You know, he's
sure.
You know, it's like he can.
When you tweet it, at least you can address
it. Like you know, he's a guy who would, reach out, and he's a guy who would ask for help, and he's, you know, he's a smart dude, and I appreciate that he would do that and publicly criticize, as opposed to be publicly nothing, and then kind of like wanting to have the connectivity. I like him. You know, I don't know him personally or well, but I, you know, it's like I'd have no dislike for this guy.
Well, he also, he's friends with folks who put on the Stronger Men's Conference with the male stripper.
There you go.
And so he better be able to take a little criticism back.
Guilt by proximity.
Speaking of cosplaying.
Luckily, that's not how guilt works. But the thing, I like that criticism, especially because the thing that's funny is that when my dad cosplays masculinity, he builds institutions. And it's, we're at this place now where it's hundreds and hundreds of schools downstream from what he's built. We did a marketing thing where he's flamethrowing in defense of, you know, of the home. And the fact is what he's building, a denomination, starting a denomination because the PCA was soft. That denomination, the CREC, actually was on the tip of the spear, cutting edge, defending the church against all the COVID mandates. Their statements were being used. They were the only denomination out there with a statement that was being used by believers everywhere in every denomination against vaccine mandates by their employers, by the government, and effectively so.
Yeah, national statements that you can pass.
And it got repurposed and adopted. Like, it just, local churches were adopting them like mad, because their own denominations didn't do it. The CREC, now with hundreds of churches internationally, they were the actual spear point shield for believers in every communion. Like, in every single communion, people had to get behind that shield and that protection from this denomination. That's not cosplaying.
Yeah.
Starting a denomination. Millions of kids now, like millions of kids at this point, have gone through curriculum and instruction that my dad was at the, you know, at the top of, where he created it and started it and got it going. It's so much stuff. So much. Yeah. The school he started in Moscow, Idaho, the people that have gone on to do things and accomplish stuff downstream, and then the people from the schools that were modeled off the school he started in Moscow, Idaho, in the Association of Education he founded. You know, it's like all of that stuff. We're talking people at the Oscars. We're talking people arguing in front of SCOTUS. We're talking about, mm-hmm. you know, all sorts of people all over the place. And many of them, just because they don't have, you know, they're not Doug's kid, get to just go operate. They just can just go function. So the impact has been enormous. And there's nothing cosplaying about it. Now, I will agree, there's a lot of people who are LARPing masculinity.
Yeah.
There are a lot of dorks on the internet and on the socials who are doing that.
I mean, isn't that social media though? I have trouble granting the criticism at all. That's like, no, sorry, an advertisement.
No, there are people who are not masculine.
Sure. Right.
And are pretending to be masculine on social media.
Okay.
You know, they're oiling their beards and doing their things, but they're total wusses in life.
Yep. They're the back room. Sneaks. Yeah,
there's plenty of people like that. And sure. But a marketing piece, like a marketing production, the thing I love about No Quarter November, especially, I should just say, is that the marketing team at Canon says, hey, so here's what's going to happen. And they call the secretary, they get it on my dad's schedule. And it's like, my dad shows up and they're like, so here's the flamethrower. And he's like, what am I doing? he has no part of the planning really at all. You know,
the furthest he did is he said, could I read the manual? Your dad's a notorious manual.
Yeah.
Like, could I read the flamethrower?
Could I read the flamethrower manual? he shows up, there's a plan, he walks into it and Canon burns something down for the promotion of the month, you know, for the November promotions. And it's always a blast and it's great marketing.
Yeah.
And it's hilarious.
And it's not what Doug did to promote himself.
That's the funny. Well, that's the funniest part of it. The funniest part of it is that he rolls in. He's the easiest guy in the world to work with. You know, it's like a 70-year-old guy showing up and being like, I'm strapping on this very heavy flamethrower and I'm going to go blast these cartoons.
Right,
blast these cartoon cutouts. And he's like, all right, I'm trusted you guys. He's like, okay. Like, this is
him saying, you know, we say, hey, Doug, do you have overalls? And he says, no, I don't. And Nancy says, yes, he does.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, the whole Tucker thing is great. And what's funny to me is that it's not new. If we put together this, you know, stack of my dad's media, like of what he's done since 2008, probably like we go back 15 years and we look at all the media and the interviews and everything else. It's really kind of hilarious.
And
when Christopher Hitchens was the big giant ghoul, my dad was the one who wrote a really viral exchange of letters mm-hmm. with Hitch in debating with him, and then went on the road with him and debated him on film, and then is the guy that Hitch was still talking about in Vanity Fair on his deathbed. It's not, you know, it's like, it's when people need a fighter, and I've actually always kind of thought of my dad as kind of like Churchillian, you know, mm-hmm. it's, in, and if we were going to switch the metaphor and say, okay, there's this little tiny nation, this little England, right? And now we're going to say there's this little world of conservative evangelicalism. Mm. Not big Eva. I'm talking the conservatives, because this is really only about the little conservative pockets. So who are very close to us. Like, we actually are the most similar to them theologically and everything else. And so I think that the distinctions are a big deal to them. But we're the most similar to them. There's this little nation of England. We're no longer talking about a tiny little neighborhood. It's a little country. Nobody wants Churchill. Nobody likes Churchill until there's Nazis to fight. Mm. Nobody wants that guy until there's nightmares to deal with. And that's been the rhythm of my dad's entire career. The rhythm of my dad's entire career has been when the big bad wolf shows up, people say, bring us Doug Wilson. And like, we need somebody who is not scared and can laugh at Christopher Hitchens. But like, actually laugh, not some conjuring up a laugh, but laugh because
not
he's
LARPing,
amused,
as we said.
Yeah. And so in Collision, there's one famous moment that did not make the cut, famous, infamous inside the production crew, because Darren Doan, the director, was telling the story of Hitch railing in this debate, railing against the faith. And my dad was sitting there with a notepad, drawing on the notepad. And so Darren with his camera got around behind us, like, oh, this is going to be awesome. Like, cause there's Hitch railing and I've got his opponent is taking notes and I'm going to come up over, you know, the camera up over my dad's back and then reveal the notes. And here's Hitch debating kind of in the background and we go foreground on Doug Wilson, like writing down, it's going to feel very debatey. Mm-hmm. And he came up over the back of my dad and my dad was drawing cartoons. He was actually just doodling cartoon dudes. And while Hitch was railing, and it didn't make the movie because it felt too much like a spiking of the football. It was actually what was happening. It's actually what was happening. But when Hitch was right at his angriest and most ferocious, and so many guys were so intimidated, my dad was just doodling cartoon guys and then got up and blasted him, put him on blast. And it was great. And it did it effectively. And did it while becoming friends with him. You know, it's like it's, and if Hitch did make the kingdom, if he did repent and did turn to Christ at the end, which was in the cards and was something he was openly considering.
Yeah.
And discussing, if that actually happened, and there's guys who have made that case, my dad was a huge part of it. And it's, yeah, so Hitchens was this big, scary, the new atheists were big and scary. Like the new atheism was terrifying. And we need Doug Wilson. When all the COVID mandates came down, like Moscow, Idaho, and this community, it was the epicenter of conflict against that. Like it was the pushback. And I had a criminal case about it yesterday, right, or the day before, and I've got one tomorrow. Like we're still in the courts and we still don't regret that. You know, it's like, we're still brawling. And so it's big and it's scary. And then now we have all this chaos of just cultural mayhem, absolute cultural decay, just collapsing everywhere. And there's somebody who's not rattled and not scared and preaching the gospel and isn't freaking out. It's like, this is what he's for. It's like, I've always seen him as Churchillian. Like people they did not like him. They would not invite him to dinner parties. And then suddenly they wanted to keep him out of government. And then now we need him.
Yeah.
Now we need him because there's enemies. There's enemies. And so we need the scary dog as opposed to the lap dogs. We've got plenty of lap dogs. Mm. There's lap dogs everywhere. So many lap dogs, but how many dogs do you keep outside in the stable? And you wait to use them until there's enemies.
Being one of the sheep in the congregation when the COVID stuff happened and when we did the outdoor church services, what an awesome moment of leadership by the elder board and Doug, as we're all pulling our cars in, you know, not knowing what's happening, but in the moment being faithful to worship God is the most important thing. That's been, you can watch that sort of moment, that play be called every time, because it would have been easy to be very scared.
I think there, if I remember correctly, and I'll try not to misrepresent this, but I think the elders even, at those initial services, those initial illegal church services that were being had, you know, and they had to custom design communion and everything they were doing was pretty great.
Right, in a little bags, but yeah.
While parishioners were free to wear masks, right? Nobody's going to get in trouble for coming to church in a mask. You know, it's like if they really want to wear a mask, they can wear a mask. But if I understand it, I think the ministers actually told people that they could not administer communion or be part of that if they were going to wear a mask, because the leadership was not going to signal fear. Mm. You know, it's like if you want to wear a mask, that's fine individually if you feel you should, but you're not actually going to be in any kind of active leadership role through this time. Mm. And so that's,
well, you can feel it as a church,
and it's sort of
as
like
a church member and fear. Well, I think your dad gave a great Easter sermon on fear, guilt, and anxiety being the three things that Christ saved us from. And once again, gospel all the time. But yeah, that hugely fearful and anxious time.
But being at the tip of the spear and being there on a national level for the fight when it came to COVID mandates, when it came to government incursions into the sphere of the church and so on, when they were saying that churches were not essential, but strip clubs were.
Yep.
When they were in that wild hypocrisy, this community, my dad, were in the forefront, you know, pushing, pushing and fighting, and always have been. Every time that kind of thing has reared its ugly head. And so I've told the story many times before, but a very formative moment for me when I was 12. So we're talking 33 years ago. I think I was 12. A big fight around homosexual materials in libraries. And, you know, there was a state proposition, and it was all a big tussle around the propaganda and the perversion and a lot of just dark, dark, dark stuff that was being seeded in the libraries. So we're talking about more than 30 years ago. Some people are only just starting to fight about this now.
Yeah.
Like they're only just realizing it now, 30 years back. Mm-hmm. There was this big fight going on, and it was a packed place, and it was supposed to be a town hall, but it wasn't. And the Dykes on Bikes came, and the Lesbian Avengers came. So yeah, we can let Brian cough. Brian inhaled his coffee. He should. I'm going to take the opportunity to sip.
I'm dying.
And that one.
Continue.
Yeah. So in that one, my dad took me to this event. They had already pre-packed the hall, so there was no town hall. It was just all gay rights activists who were pushing this material for the libraries. It was a hot enough crowd that we were like, our folks were getting spat on walking in. It was already loud, violent, on the edge, you know, threats of violence and so on. It was crazy enough that my dad wrote a note to the moderator in advance to call the police before he walked on stage and tucked it in his pocket so he could hand it to the moderator quickly and sent me, the 12-year-old kid, down into the crowd. So I was down in that, crowd. He was up on stage. And it's funny because his laugh, when he starts to laugh, he starts to chuckle, and then he starts coughing, and he starts thumping his chest. Mm-hmm. He has this chest thump reaction. It's funny seeing, like, I have very vivid memories seeing him up on the stage delivering, you know, his discourse and his preaching of the gospel, getting shouted at and insulted and threats yelled, and having him laugh. Genuinely, just genuine laughter, you know, just, and not like, ha, 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 but like amused, like people would throw an insult and it would tickle his funny bone. And he would kind of chuckle and slap his chest and keep going. Like, that's what he's for. Like, that's what he was made for. That's what God made him for. That's mm-hmm. what he's great at. And so now in this moment in time, as he talks about Christian nationalism, so-called, which just means the authority of God over the state. Which is something that's been, it's not new, and it's something my dad's been talking about forever. It just currently has this boogeyman insult that the left has been using that's been embraced.
Yeah, as Tucker points out, that's what Biden's running on. It's his only it's his only hope for the election.
he's the guy. My dad's the guy. So if Tucker wants to talk about it, of course he's going to talk to my dad about it. But it's a very funny thing to me to see the gospel industrial complex, the faith market, is a place where I just have never, ever succeeded. I just can't operate. I don't go. And even when I've been invited in, even when there's opportunities, I just can't. I you know, I'm ill-mannered. You know, it's like I'm not.
No.
I don't know I don't know. I don't know how the lapdog world works. I just don't get it. And there's a lot of really nice people. There's a lot of really nice people there and really nice people in that little neighborhood. But they think, and I saw one tweet about how hard this guy's working to keep Moscow on the periphery.
That was so funny.
And it was beautiful because you're on the periphery. You don't understand. It's a misunderstanding. It's Pluto thinking it's the center of the solar system.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's not. It's like, you're way out there. We're over here circling the sun. You're way, way, way out there.
Yeah.
Circling the sun. We're not trying to circle you. We're not trying to be invited to your birthday party. We're not trying to get into Pluto's good graces. But there's this weird self-absorption from tiny, tiny Eva as opposed to big Eva. Mm. And it's bizarre to me. It always makes me genuinely laugh just seeing these guys who are all at each other's conferences. And it's like they could all fit, all the speakers could fit in one green room. All the speakers from all the conferences could hang out. And, you know, It's just odd to me.
Well, I'm still struggling because you flipped the metaphor on me. I'm so used to Sherwood Forest metaphor, center of the kingdom.
Oh, we are in Sherwood Forest for sure.
You're just saying these are guys in a tiny hamlet outside of
who's Nottingham.
Right.
It's not tiny Eva.
Yeah.
You know, it isn't them. But we are in Sherwood Forest for sure. And that's represented by, for example, fighting with the state about COVID.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, we weren't fighting with tiny Eva about COVID. We were fighting with the Department of Justice and the city of Moscow and the state of Idaho.
Right.
You know, we're fighting attorney generals. It's not, you know, it's the sheriff of Nottingham. It isn't really, really small, friendly neighborhood that's allowed to just exist in safety because yeah. It totally complies.
Right. Here's a follow-up question. I think a lot of people have this nervous reaction when, say, Doug goes on something like Tucker. And there, a lot of our conservative people think, how can this be co-opted for evil? And they're worried that people will see it, turn it into a personality cult about Doug.
Oh, no.
You know, perhaps get co-opted
by— I've been trying that forever. It just never worked.
the wrong Christian nationalists are going to get too much out of this. You know, what do you think about that side? Well, I do think conservatives are a pretty nervous bunch on the whole. When something good happens, it's tough for them to jump on and say, yes, there's always got to be more hedges, more conserving happening around the win. We don't take the win very often.
I myself have a doctorate in guardrails.
Yeah.
You know, that's, it's really.
Yeah. They're the ones with the the giant wood with the metal on it all the way around to make sure that this could possibly only go the way that we want it to go.
Right. And it just won't.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just not going to happen.
So it's totally unrealistic.
I don't even know who you're talking about. Cause I don't know that any like big leadership level conservatives are in any way concerned about anything my dad said. They would only be concerned that he clearly still has access to microphones. And they're pretty sure that they issued a declaration.
Hey, we said.
It reminds me when I was excommunicated by a denomination in Canada.
Wait, they excommunicated you?
Yeah, I received a notification. May God have mercy on my soul that I'd been excommunicated.
But now, you were not a member of this church in Canada.
These are not relevant facts. Okay. So I was excommunicated for some funny things that I had written in print. And
saucy.
Yeah, so I got this notification. A trial had been held, and I had been condemned. That's what we're dealing with.
Hmm.
Like, that's it. It's the same thing. We get these little notifications. And if we're staying in the Robin Hood, Sherwood Forest metaphor, we very much are in Sherwood Forest. And there's Tiny Eva is in Nottingham, in one neighborhood in Nottingham, where it's allowed to exist because it's very well-behaved and docile and easy to control.
Gotcha.
So.
And they send a note.
And we Robin. Actually, on the theology test, we actually would agree with them on almost everything.
Right.
Like theologically, we're cousins, you know, or siblings.
Yeah. As much as they say, the word heretic gets thrown around a lot.
Yeah.
But no, we're the same.
Yeah. What do you even mean?
Yeah.
By that, cult leader is also really funny. I joke, I tell my dad, like, things would be a lot easier around here if he just would be one.
He's
like,
causing problems for himself by letting people
He shows up and he lets Ken and marketing guys plan this No Quarter November video and he just walks into it.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, okay, I trust you guys. Let's go. And
has that ever backfired?
Never. But the point is that it's a completely decentralized community.
And yeah, it really is.
And people, some libertarians who are ridiculous and don't understand the nature of man, will look at what Dad said and be like, but Christian nationalism is bad. We need decentralizers. Like, he actually is the leader of a community, unlike virtually everybody else who talks about this, for whom it's just an idea on a chalkboard. He actually is the leader of a community, and it's completely decentralized.
Yeah.
You know, it's a very free, decentralized thing.
In fact, one of my very favorite, as a member of the community, we get Friday notes with pieces of advice from your dad.
Yeah.
And one of his Friday notes was basically, hey, we don't care if you love something weird like magnesium. But leave everybody else alone about it unless they ask you. And that sort of energy of, hey, stop bothering other people.
Yeah, stop proselytizing.
Your private business. You know, if they want to know, they'll ask. And if they don't, leave them alone. And that attitude makes this community a pretty enjoyable place to be. If I do say so myself.
It's great. And you can go to the restaurants owned by church members or not. And you can,
right.
You know, it's like, it's great.
Now, if Doug were a cult leader and you could only go eat.
Right.
That would be so much easier.
Yeah.
We'd make a lot more money.
Let me put it this way. It's a big community. It's basically a town, right? We're a small town inside of a small town.
Right.
And if everybody had to run their business deals by the elders first, it would go so much better.
And
the elders, wouldn't have to do counseling on the other side. They wouldn't have to do business mediation on the other side, but they don't. People are free to enter into all sorts of crazy relationships and, mm-hmm. and like, well, he shook my hand about these spec houses or, you know, whatever this investment is. It's human. It's a bunch of humans and everything's great. I love this community. It's fantastic. But the ministers minister. That's what they do. They don't boss people around. There's no bossing.
Yeah.
You know, it is a really.
The sheep get to be sheep. They have a whole meadow.
We're free range people. Come on.
There are no fences.
We're fence free.
Fence free.
Yeah.
Free range sheep.
It's pretty, it's very funny, but it's the things that surprise me about moments like this are that the tiny neighborhood is shocked that once again, my dad's speaking into a microphone that they do not have access to.
The Canon Twitter. How does he can't keep getting away with this.
Yes,
the guy
yes.
yelling and crying.
Yeah. Like how was it that he was the guy fighting Christopher Hitchens? How was it that even Jellyfish, like when he took a swing at even Jellyfish and Megachurch Goo with that novel and won Book of the Year from Christianity Today, which is hilarious.
We will never stop bringing that up.
Yeah, Fiction of the Year. It was actually a moment where they would have tiptoed normally around such criticisms because those people had political strength. Those megachurch people, they were on important, you know, boards and you know, so Dad wrote a hilarious novel. It's really, really funny. I had the privilege of getting to edit early drafts of it, and it was just so much fun. And so
it's why he gets to put award-winning novelist in his bio whenever he wants.
And of course now CT, he actually recently offered to send the award back to CT if they wanted it, which is really funny. He offered it, but it's not I don't know what award that would be. It's like, it's not a thing.
We have it here at Canon. It's a piece of paper.
Yeah. We'll send it back. If they want it back, we'll send it back.
Well, they have to ask for it and we have to get it on paper.
Yeah. Then we'd have a huge marketing heyday if they tried to unaward it. But it was a courageous thing for him to have done at that moment in time, to have written that thing, taking a shot at a sacred cow. And that's what he does.
That was one of my first books at Canon as a lowly product manager, working to put together the parts of the dust jacket.
Yep. It's a great package.
Yeah. Deciding.
It's good.
Deciding to put, I remember you and all the designers working through, do we put gummies on the cover, you know, or do we put this very serious fallen angel thing when stone?
That one was never going to work.
That one wasn't. It didn't. It looked too gross. But instead, the gummies with one fallen down.
Yeah. The gummies worked.
Yeah.
It's a great book. You should get it. Even Jellyfish is the audiobook on canonplus.com.
Join canonplus.com.
Canonplus.
You can listen to it.
Because you know what we're here for?
To make
sales.
Money.
Sales.
And we're after a bag.
Yeah.
As everyone in Sherwood Forest is.
Everyone. Yeah. But we're after exactly. We're after the Sheriff of Nottingham's bag, right. Not yours. We'll
not
give
yours.
You a great deal. The thing that's funny is, In all of this, my dad, the gospel presentation was fantastic. People want to support it, and then they find themselves in this position of not liking the preacher.
Mm.
You know, just not liking, but those are great words, but I don't like that guy. Mm. Because that guy makes me feel bad about my marriage. That guy makes me feel bad about the fact that my kids are in public schools. That guy makes me feel bad about these other things. He's really just so hilariously jovial and easygoing.
Yeah.
And the easiest guy in the world.
I mean, who knew that P.G. Woodhouse would be the way that your dad would make friends both with Tucker and Christopher Hitchens? Yeah. You know, if all you have to do is like good literature and all of a sudden.
What is also fun is that my dad is good friends with Peter Hitchens and was friends with those two brothers separately and by different means. Like did not meet them through the same channels, but
Peter Hitchens referred to your dad, I think, as the Ayatollah of the Palouse, his affectionate one. While we're speaking of cult leaders, but when Peter came out here, that was that affectionate.
Yeah, it's pretty funny, but it is really strange. I mean, it's just really, really strange. The kind of Because we've been out in Sherwood Forest, we have access to the entire kingdom. There's no walls. We're just able to go anywhere. But then there's that little walled city with its little neighborhood. And, you know.
They keep saying, don't climb the wall. Don't do it.
Don't do it. And that's like, I think their biggest stress out, we're not trying to get in there. The biggest stress out is how many other people are climbing out. So, and they're welcome. You know, they're absolutely welcome. I think it'll be a while before some of those guys that I'll hear from in private would be willing to publicly say anything, but it will happen, but it will get pretty bad.
Yeah. This is Thomas Kuhn wrote the book, Structure of Scientific Revolution, where he talks about how
Kuhn, K-U-H-N.
Yep. Where he talks about how ideas like that don't change until people die. Like, scientific revolution replaces people as old school failed scientists, you know, fall out of the spotlight.
Yep.
And it does sometimes feel like that in public life, where it's tough for adults to change their minds. You know, the shakeup's been big enough in America in the past 3 years that we've seen some big names actually do change their minds. But it does feel like sometimes when you wall yourself off in a community, you're just making it harder for yourself to change your mind.
I'll end on this really chipper note. The recent rashes of anti-Semitism,
right,
which have been kind of all over the place and in various
online, right, all over the place online,
and the Middle East,
sure, okay,
but yeah, it's been frothy on college campuses. Online in college quads.
That's right. In the middle of bridges.
Yeah, on bridges. As that stuff's all been coming out, and as things have been going real bad in the government schools, and people have been fighting about, you know, trans athletes and other, like all sorts of stuff has been happening, the government schools. We've watched a couple shows. We watched Masters of the Air. I like Woman in Gold, that we'd watch with the kids, you know, about people escaping. Germany, Eastern Europe. And Woman in Gold is a great Ryan Reynolds in an unusual role, young Ryan. Helen Mirren, Ryan Reynolds. And it's, you know, a woman who no longer has any money and she just lives in a small house, but came from, extreme wealth in Austria and is trying to get a painting back that was of her aunt. It was a family painting. It was in the National Museum in Austria. And even though the Nazis stole it from her family, they're refusing to give it back. Because there's all these treasures in the museums that were stolen from Jews that are still being held. But anyway, in all this, I had conversations with my kids. I was like, you know, the thing is, there were Jews in the 20s who saw the writing on the wall and got out, and, you know, who left. There's like my own, like my wife's ancestors in Ellis Island. You know, it's like when they hit, they got out probably medium, not early, but not too late, obviously. But then there are those who had stuff. And so if you had nothing, if you were downtrodden and life was hard and you were working and it was difficult, but you're getting there and you have kind of a middle-class existence, and then you see all of this anti-Semitism starting up. And it's coming again. And there's this rhythm of this in Jewish history that just happens over and over and over again. And here it comes. And you think, we should get on a boat. Like, we should start over. Mm-hmm. It's easier to do that when you're kind of got nothing, you know, when you don't have much. When you have the really beautiful house, when you have the opulent dinner parties, when you have the Stradivarius of, you know, cello, when you've built something, really built something, you hang on for so much longer and you wait and you wait and you wait because you feel like you've got something. And I don't think it's so much, that's an extreme example of like you have intense wealth. And so you hold on, you're more likely to end up in the chambers. You're more likely to end up murdered because you have something you're waiting for and holding on to, and you don't want to let go and go start over.
Yeah.
But it's actually really, really hard to let go of comfort. Of a comfortable existence. It is very difficult to let go of a nice green lawn that you mow on Saturdays and, you know, a couple nice cars in the garage and your kids in a decent school district, public school, where you don't have to pay tuition.
Yeah.
You don't have to sacrifice for their education. They come home and you complain a little bit about it, but you want them to have the American experience and prom and football. And, you know, you're doing that. It's actually really hard to let go of that. And just like, this is easy. It's comfortable. It would be really disruptive to get serious about my kid's education, to get into a better church. I might have to take a stand and leave this job and not know what I'm doing for work and rebuild. You might find yourself in the metaphorical go west that's happened to other people other times. And there's always those people who hang on for too long. They hang on to comfortable for too long, and then the door closes.
Yeah.
And you reach a moment when those doors are closing and a few people are still getting out, and then they're done and no one else is getting out. Like that happens. There's a moment in time. And I think that is happening to a lot of Christian families right now. There's a lot of Christian families. They were given a massive wake-up call. A lot of them started to get out. They started to get out of their trashy churches. They started to get out of, I mean, some of these people have been asleep for a long time. There's people who are getting out of denominations that hadn't been alive forever,
yep.
But they still believed. And they suddenly discovered that they believed because this started to happen. But I'm so grateful for my dad that in 1976, he saw it.
Yeah.
Like he could see it in 76, and my mom helped him see it. You know, my mom was the one who said of my older sister when she was newborn, how could we ever give her to the government? You know, just give her to an unbeliever to train and educate. And that like jarred my dad. I was like, whoa, like here's my baby girl. And my wife was saying, why?
Got 5 years before.
Yeah.
I'm supposed to send her to preschool.
Yeah. And that's when he gave my mom his word that he would have a good Christian school in time for her to start kindergarten. And that's first year Logos was her kindergarten year. And since then, Logos, like I said, Logos has had graduates arguing in front of SCOTUS and everywhere. Like, this is a great school. My kids have gone there. I went through there. We're very grateful for it. But there's good schools. There's good schools around the country. But there's a ton of people who are not making the moves out of jobs, out of churches, out of educational situations because it's comfortable.
Yeah.
And they waited too long. And I've heard from some people where they were like, we really wanted to. We suddenly realized last year or 2 years ago, you know, it's like, this is, we got to get our kids out of the public school. We got to get out of this terrible, unbelieving church, and then couldn't, was just unable to. And they're like, well, we'll try again later. And say, like, I don't know that you will. Like, that door might be closed. Your kids might be getting on the trains. Intellectually, you might lose them. So when in the behind the scenes, when Tucker asked my dad how many of his,
which you can watch on Canon Plus, join canonplus.com.
When Tucker asked my dad how many of his grandchildren were Christians, the fact that all of them are is a tremendous blessing.
Yeah, what grace.
Yeah, it's a tremendous blessing. It's a kindness of God, but there's a lot of people who are dooming their descendants. You know, it's like apart from the radical intervention of God, they're just sending them off, and your grandkids will be...
Yeah, are your grandkids in a culturally non-Christian place?
Yeah.
Because that's most of the country.
And exactly.
I'm not saying you should want your grandkids to be culturally Christian.
But the good, you should want them
to be
culturally Christian and be actually, culturally Christian because they're actually Christian.
Yeah.
But it's really interesting. My grandfather is, I think my dad even quoted this on Tucker, was fond, probably still is fond of saying.
Up in heaven.
God takes you from where you are, not from where you ought to be.
Yeah.
It's start today.
Yeah.
Like, start today. You've been abdicating as a father. You better turn it around today. I understand that it's comfortable, that you have a 9-to-5. You've got a 401k. You've got a riding lawnmower. Congrats. Like, you're going to lose your children. Congrats. You're raising them in this milquetoast church that's not giving them anything. You know, like, it's not too late. It's never too late to repent. It is at different times too late to avoid the judgment and avoid the consequences of previous actions. Mm. So, like, it's not too late. A woman having a baby out of wedlock, it's not too late to repent, but it's too late to, you know, avoid that. And God will bring it, God will work it together for good. Like if you repent, he'll work it together for good.
Right.
His promises are real, but consequences are real too. And there's a plenty of people who should have gotten out of places they didn't much earlier. And that's been the case. And I think a lot of the people we saw migrating through COVID, like here and elsewhere, they should have moved earlier, but it took that to get them out.
Well, this is a sad demonstration of that point. So we sell science curriculum, right? And other curricula saw a huge boost in 2021 as people pulled their kids out, realizing, wow, public school is terrible. Look at what my kids are doing.
Yep.
I watch them on video and it's terrible.
Yep.
That was pretty hard. And then in 2022, across the nation, we saw the parents put their kids back
in because you want tuition's free. Tuition's free.
And maybe this year it'll be better. Video is just hard. You know, what I saw in the classroom must not have been real.
It's probably that teacher.
Yep.
But you know what? Tuition's free.
And
tuition's free.
You know, when you're paying for a private school, it's expensive.
Yeah, you feel it's hard.
You know, that you decide it's worth it.
Yep.
I was going to ask you what the takeaway is from this, and mine was going to be much more cheerful than yours, but I think yours is the call to action. It's go west if you need to.
It's sort of, think through what is the best situation. I mean, I actually see this, let me pivot this more towards our own audience, but I see this with kids who aren't in schools too. I see this with kids who are homeschooled where there's a little writing on the wall of like, I don't think this is working for Johnny. Mm. Like, I don't think this is the best for him. But mom's got it dialed. You know, she's got it dialed.
You do pick a male child name on purpose.
Yeah. And if I put him in school, that'd be expensive and hard right now. And this is easy. Mom's got it. And it's not necessarily easy for her. It's easy for dad.
Mm.
You know, it's easy for dad that she's doing all this work that she's putting on her and it's not working. So she even gets the blame. It's so easy for dad.
Wow.
You know, it's the worst. Mom's doing everything. And if he's not becoming the man he ought to be becoming, it's even her fault,
you know,
which is horrible.
Yeah.
You know, it's a really horrible situation to be in. And I actually have seen that often.
That dad move is pretty classic though.
Yeah.
Abdicate and then blame. Yep. Like
that's, she wants to.
Right.
And it's like, oh, does she, you know, as opposed to like, will you crawl over broken glass to get your kids really fantastic Christian education? Would you, are you really living in a way that, like a Christian man, that you want your sons to surpass you? Mm. You know, you want them to have every opportunity and all the training to be better than you are at being a godly Christian man. It's all the time. It's like, listen, the clock's ticking. He's 16. The clock's ticking. He's 15. He's 14. Like, what are you doing? You're just doing the easy thing that has nothing ever is going to land on you. It's never going to land on you.
Until it lands way too late.
Until it lands. And even then it'll be like, it all landed on him, on your kid.
Yeah.
You know, and it's actually, we had a track meet yesterday. It's track season and it was a miserable weather. It was funny. And we get there and the head coach and I, we drove separate vans and we sent the kids off and I sent the senior guys off with the team tent to set up. And I went and found parking and then we walked in, we walk over to the tent. I'm like, why do they put it there? What's going on? And we make them move the tent. And then I realize that they're just trying to find some way to avoid the consequences of having not brought the tie downs or the sidewalls in really bad windy weather. This thing is going to just blow away. They just forgot it.
Nice.
And so I immediately start looking up ways to solve the problem. I'm looking for outdoor stores that are nearby. I'm looking, you know, like it's, I could go solve this. And I was like, you know, I told the head coach, I was like, let's just take it down and they can just suffer. Mm. Like, I'm not going to run, fix this. Let's just have them suffer the whole track meet. And they did. And they were all cheerful and they were great, but yeah, they ate their own cooking. And I'm pretty sure we'll never, ever have a team that forgets because it was miserable. It was a miserable track.
It was a bad day yesterday.
It was a bad day. And
both of my sons forgot coats to recess and it was the same thing.
Yeah, there's sometimes when your kid forgets their lunch and you're like, you know what? It's not nice to the teachers, and it's a waste of the day if I don't get them some blood sugar. Right. I'm going to get them some lunch rather than just having to be. There's other times where, like, you know what? This is one of them learning moments where, you know, it's better that you don't eat and actually learn. But there's going to be things for dads, especially tons of fathers, who there are the consequences coming. The consequences are going to land, and they're going to like sit with those consequences and be unable to correct them. It'll just be a repentance moment without any correction of the consequences. They won't have been in a good church. They won't have had their sons being challenged and trained and pushed in the way they needed to. They will have insecure daughters who are susceptible to the world. They will, you know, they will have been defeated any number of ways, but the whole time their defeat was comfortable. They were comfortable through the entirety of the defeat.
Yeah, wow. This has turned in another Doug Wilson thing. he said after COVID in a sermon, hey, if your main desire right now is to have things go back to how it was,
yeah,
just to be comfortable,
yep,
instead of being willing to have America have repentance and have our standard of living drop, you know, you're the problem. I think that cut real deep. Definitely did for me. Of like, yeah, I would love to go back to 2018 when everything was so easy, you know, but just realizing that desire in yourself to pick the easy rather than double down and say, no, the good stuff is hard.
Yeah. It's, if you want it just to go back the way it was, then
we have 330 million people who are all feeling that way, I think.
Yeah. Can we just get it back? And we want a hard reset back to just a few years ago.
Right.
And we've got a lot more than that to do.
Back
but I'll say,
yeah.
I'd say to, this is an affirming the consequent thing, basic syllogism here. If your life is easy, then you are doing it wrong. I mean, that's just, it is not supposed to be. You're doing it wrong. Paul uses track and field. Like, we talk about running the race.
Beat your body.
If your track practice is easy, you're doing it wrong. If your races are easy, you're doing it wrong. And this is the race you're in. So if your life is actually, like, everything's where it ought to be and stable and organized and pretty comfortable, and we've got this routine and we've got it figured out, if life is easy, you are absolutely doing it wrong. If life is hard, it doesn't mean you're doing it right.
That's logic.
Yeah, that's the affirming the consequent. If it's easy, you're doing it wrong. And then, of course, you try to flip it around. It's like, oh, it's hard. I must be doing it right. If you're doing it right, it will be hard. It's hard, therefore I'm doing it right. No, not necessarily. And I really want to take a shot at dads here, especially because this is ultimately what they will do. They will come home from work. They'll go do the thing and think that they just did the hard thing, so now they get to have it easy. But they don't understand how hard it is on everybody else and how hard they are on everybody else. And they, you know, they come home and check social media and want to have a cigar and a scotch and put their feet up and not do all the necessary hard work of fathering and husbandry that comes right there.
Yeah.
In that moment. And it's easy for guys to do guys are, I think, primarily, most of us are just emotional and primary colors. We don't have like a really complex system. But it's, it's really easy for guys to miss how much their wife is struggling and suffering and working to keep it all going, to keep it all humming along. And they are just benefiting as one more dependent, you know, one more dependent as they enter the home again.
Yeah.
And so she's got a bunch of dependents and he comes in, he's just the biggest dependent. Right. And because he hopefully paid the bills, he feels like he can just splat, which is terrible. And this is probably the single biggest reason why I coach. It's because my kids are of the age where they need coaches and my kids' friends are of an age and they need coaches. And like, this is, it's part of the work. So dads, especially, don't get yourself into a status quo where you are like, this is stable, this is fine, I am comfortable. My wife might not be comfortable, but but I am comfortable and I will not move or take action until my wife gets so uncomfortable that she starts being an awful wife. She starts being nagging and dripping and complaining because she
needs the reactivity that drives many.
And you're creating that situation where you've tempted her way past what she can handle. You're putting way too much on her. And so now she's being obnoxious to you and she is the discomfort that you then start to solve. And so you have become uncomfortable, but it's only because of her.
And then what do you solve for? You solve to pacify.
Yeah, exactly. You solve to get her to stop instead of trying to solve to make the whole thing great.
Yeah.
You just try to solve to make her stop being.
If we're supposed to glorify God and enjoy him forever, enjoying takes a lot of work. And I think it's not the sitting back. It's I'm going to actively try to love this six-year-old who's really not cute anymore and has jumped up into the big kid stage and desperately needs dad just to like him.
That if you and your wife both have your sleeves up and you're both working hard and you're both working to the bone joyfully, and at the end of the day, when the kids are down, you can sit down and have that moment of co-laborers where it's like, job well done. Like we did it. We got through it. There we go. Another one in the books. It's like, if you're capable of the two of you having that moment, you know, looking at the sunset at the end of the day,
right?
We both worked. We were both in the harness. We were both working today. We both pushed. And you don't get into the contest of who had the harder day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't start getting into that. You trust her to have like been working and she trusts you to have been working and you're both working at the same goals and entering the same hardship together. Then you're in a great place. Like that's a good thing. Like keep it up. Mm-hmm. Like keep it up. It's hard in the right ways. But if you are sitting down at the end of the day and she's like, oh, the worst day. And you're like, well, try mine, you know, you know, then that's like, it's broken. It's unfortunately broken. But dads, I would just say, disrupt your life. Disrupt your life to actually sacrifice your life. Like that's what you're doing. Disrupt your life in such a way to actually sacrifice your life for the benefit of your wife and your children. You know, and that means as hard as it has to be, however hard it has to be for you, that's what you got to be willing to do to get them to where they need to be where they're being challenged and trained and led in the right ways, fed at church, fed at school, and so on. Don't be the slacker. And I know most of us are inclined that way. So don't do it. The universal temptation. Don't do it.
Yeah. I don't know how we got there from Tucker, but it made sense
It made sense at the time. So, oh, well, this is what our podcast is we chat and we go wherever.
Yeah.
Listen to the whole Tucker interview if you haven't, those of you out there. It's great.
We'll drop a link in the description.
Yeah, it was a great interview. Lots of gospel, lots of great stuff. And know that masculinity isn't posing. Masculinity is building and protecting.
There we go. Like, that's how we got there.
Build and protect. And you might need to get in a covered wagon and move west. That's possible. Or, you know, across town to that better church.
Did you know
might have to drive slightly longer to go to a great church. I mean, this or great school. And that's,
did you know,
it's
they
so
had,
funny how much I've heard just that, by the way. Let me vent about that.
Okay.
Like somebody's like, oh, I don't know what we should do because I've got a great job. And it's like, but my kids are getting a crappy education. And I kind of like, where are you? And it's like, oh, we're such and such a town. And I'm like, oh, I've done appearances in a school there. I know there's a good school there. And they're like, yeah, but it's 25 minutes both ways. I'm like, is it?
We've talked about this. Higher will.
Is it? Yeah.
Higher will.
Is it 25 minutes? Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, your kids really should go to hell then. You know, it's like, it's 25 minutes both ways. It's amazing. I think about the level of lift my mom and my dad had to do to get us a Christian education, to have Logos School like up from the rubble,
right?
Made from bricks with no straw.
The good moments, the teachers along the way, all the other parents,
all the sacrifice from everybody who was involved in that lift. Yeah. It wasn't like they were the only ones doing it. There's a lot of people in that lift and that level of agony and pain that they went through to get us the education that would train us is incredible. And I have trouble keeping a straight face when people often explain to me why they can't have their kids in that great school that was founded, modeled off of Logos in their hometown, but it's just, it's so far.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so far.
I mean, the metaphor I heard once that a lot of the covered wagons had all wooden wheels, so no metal axles, which meant that they would shriek like crazy, and you could hear them from miles away. So they're basically going from Indianapolis to Oregon, shrieking loud enough to be heard miles away. And that's what they were willing to do.
My grandfather was in the womb in a covered wagon heading into Nebraska. And that covered wagon, I'm told, was on rubber tires, which is pretty...
Rubber.
They had rubber on there. So it wasn't much of a sacrifice after all.
That was posh.
They ended up living in a chicken coop.
Oh, okay.
For some stretch. They finally built their way all the way up to having a farm. The farm was annihilated by the Dust Bowl. You know, like, oh, yeah.
Build, protect.
Keep on crawling. Build and protect over and over and over again. Rinse and repeat. And come to really, really love the Sabbath as part of that, because your life needs to be hard. It needs to be a struggle. It needs to be, you know, it needs to be suffering. And there needs to be this rhythm, this breath of just rest. If we just put our pencils down, put down the sledgehammer, we're just not doing it. It's Sunday. It's a day to just enjoy and savor just being together, you know, go to worship and then good food and relaxation and don't work. And so we have a rhythm of 6 p.m. Saturday to 6 p.m. Sunday, and it's an absolute sanity saver. You know, you can really push hard all the way to that finish line, because you know that it's like 24 hours of rest. And it turns out that's how God made us. So it's pretty great. So there you go. Go hard, suffer, keep the Sabbath. Those are the themes. And listen to the whole Tucker interview. This has been Stories for Soul Food.
It's what you're here for.
That's the life I want. I want to be 70 and have 18 grandchildren. Let's go!
I came from the mud. There's dirt on my hands. Strong like a tree. There's roots where I stand.
I'm Tucker Carlson, and I am here with the very famous and highly controversial Pastor Doug Wilson.
Even more controversial.
Try to catch me howling at the moon.